Okay, so yesterday we dealt with, and I'll do just a brief summary of it, we dealt with the question of whether Sfirat HaOmer nowadays is biblical or rabbinic. And we noted that at first glance it seems to hang on the question of how do you understand the connection between Sfirat HaOmer and the Karban HaOmer. And we noted that there are basically three different ways of taking it. There's two extremes, right? One is that Sfirat HaOmer depends, the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer biblically depends on the actual bringing of the Karban HaOmer, in which case, nowadays, when we don't bring the Karban HaOmer, there's no biblical mitzvah to count, and it's only rabbinic. All the way to the other extreme is to say that the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer is completely independent of the Karban HaOmer, and therefore nowadays it's obviously still biblical, and we noted that that type of conception could be taken if you thought that Sfirat HaOmer was more about counting towards Matan Torah or something like that. The middle model, which we saw variations of in Reb Chaim and the Keren Ora within the Rambam, is to say that the counting of the Omer doesn't depend on the actual bringing of the Omer, but it depends only on the theoretical chiyuv, right? The ability in theory to bring the Karban HaOmer. So even though nowadays we don't actually bring the Omer, since we're still obligated to bring the Omer, or the Beit HaMikdash's Kedusha is still there, even the Beit HaMikdash doesn't exist, and therefore it's something that exists in potential, so therefore it's biblical to bring the to count the Omer even nowadays. And we noted, so now if we turn here to source 1, that the Gemara has this short little sugyan, Samach Vav, where the Gemara says that Gufa Amar Abaye Mitzvah Lemimne Yome Umitzvah Lemimne Shavu'e. Abaye had said that the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer is to count weeks and days, the way we do. Right? Hayom Yom, Hayom Shmone Yamim Shem Shavu'e Echad V'yom Echad HaOmer, or at least Hayom Sheva Yamim Shem Shavu'e Echad HaOmer. So Abaye says you count days and weeks. Rabbanan de Beir of Ashi, manu yomei umane shavuei. And following that, the Beit Midrash of Ravashi indeed counted days and weeks. But Ameimar, mane yomei velo mane shavuei. Ameimar counted days and did not count weeks. Why? Amar zecher lemikdash hu. Because he said it is merely a commemoration of the temple. And therefore, he holds that you only keep the mitzvah in a partial way. So this is what I want to analyze today, probably today and tomorrow, I guess, is the following question. So what is the machloket between Abaye and Ameimar? Ameimar says that nowadays you count days and weeks. Abaye says you don't because it's a commemoration of the Mikdash. So we know that according to Abaye, it's only rabbinic nowadays, presumably because he thinks that the karban depends on, that the counting depends on the karban. But what about us? When we count days and weeks, so what do we hold? So as we noted yesterday, the fact that we count days and weeks can lead you to one of two conclusions. Either it leads you to conclude that we think that Sfirat HaOmer is still biblical, like the Rambam. But what's the other possibility? This is what I want to focus on today. Tosfot doesn't think this is true. Tosfot thinks that we count days and weeks, and yet we only think it's rabbinic. Therefore, according to Tosfot, the machloket between Ameimar and Abaye is not whether Sfirat HaOmer is rabbinic, whether it's a zecher lamikdash, but it's what type of rabbinic law is this? Or, alternatively, what type of zecher lemikdash is this? What type of commemoration of the mikdash is it? Ameimar thinks that, well, Abaye thinks that it's merely a commemoration of the mikdash, and therefore the best way to commemorate it is to do something symbolic but incomplete. Meaning, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, you would have counted days and weeks, And nowadays, because it's only a commemoration, so you count only one, you count only days. But Amemar says, even though it's a Zecher LeMikdash, you still count the exact way you would have in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, days and weeks. So to understand this machloket according to Tosfot, who thinks that everybody agrees that this is rabbinic, and everybody agrees...
just count weeks.
What?
Amemar just says count weeks, not both.
What did I say?
You said he says you should count...
Sorry, I flipped Amemar and Abaye. You're right. Right? Meaning Amemar... No, counts weeks, not days. Sorry, days, not weeks.
Right.
Right. Sorry, I switched Abaye and Amemar. But what is the machloket Abaye and Amemar? Meaning, according to Tosfot, according to the Rambam, you could just say that the machlok is Abaye and Amemar is the basic question. Is Sfirat HaOmer nowadays biblical or not? If it is, then you count fully. If it's not, then you count not fully. You count partially. You count days and not weeks. But if you want to hold like Tosfot, then everybody agrees it's rabbinic, and everyone agrees potentially it's a Zecher LeMikdash. So then why would you have a machloket as to whether when you're doing this rabbinically and whether you're doing it Zecher LeMikdash, you should count imperfectly, right? Incompletely. So what do you think? Right? That's the conceptual question I want to analyze. What do you think? Again, assuming that this is Zecher LeMikdash, assuming that biblically Sfirat HaOmer depends on the bringing of the Omer, so nowadays it's rabbinic. So then why would you say that you should either, possibility one, commemorate the Mikdash by counting exactly the same way you did in the time of the Mikdash, or two, say that the way to commemorate the Mikdash is to count in a different, less complete way? What do you think?
Well, if you're saying it's the Zecher Mikdash, right, then to do the Zecher Mikdash, you would have to... do exactly what they did then. I mean, that would be a Zecher Mikdash. So it would remind you of the Mikdash. But at the same time, you can say, since we don't have the Mikdash, then we on purpose should count differently.
Good.
And to commemorate the fact that it's not there.
Good. So now let me push you farther, right? Let's try to sharpen that point. Okay? So one possibility is to commemorate the Mikdash, we do it the way you did in the Mikdash. In other words, in what way do you want to commemorate the Mikdash?
Right, so you're either commemorating the fact that there is a Mikdash, or that there was, versus the fact that it was destroyed.
Okay, good. So let's keep pushing it. So one possibility is to say, the way that you commemorate the Mikdash, potentially, is by recreating it, right? Or reliving it, continuing the exact same way, right? The other is to say, let's be careful. Is it that you don't have to do exactly that because it's a mere commemoration, or that you dafka want to do something that is incomplete because... Why would you say you dafka want to do something incomplete? What would the logic be there?
Well, how could you do something complete if the Mikdash is in there?
Meaning, there are... So let's try to put this in English, and then let's see if we can prove it. Okay? Let's see if we can try to understand this. Sometimes, when we commemorate things, or commemorate the Mikdash, let's say, we... are specifically trying to make ourselves feel like something is lacking. Right? We're trying to mourn the Mikdash.
Right.
Give me an example of something that we do like that.
Tisha B'Av? Yeah.
Yeah! All the Tisha B'Av related things. Perfect, right? Anything we do in the 3 weeks, Shavuot Esrei B'Tammuz, all the fast days related to the Mikdash, Tisha B'Av, putting ashes on the head at a wedding, etc. Those are all quote-unquote commemorations of the Mikdash, but they're very specific. They're mourning commemorations. They're not trying to relive the Mikdash. They're trying to drive the point home that the Mikdash is not here. And that requires a response. But then there are other types, such as where examples where the way that we commemorate the Mikdash is not by doing something which is a morning practice, which drives the point home, the Mikdash is in here, but it's rather we recreate, we try to keep the flame of the Mikdash alive, as it were, by doing what they do. So, for example, give me an example. Take an example from Pesach. Right, Korech is an interesting example. Right, Zecher leMikdash keHillel, Kein asa Hillel. Right, we eat the sandwich because this is what Hillel did in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, given his had the Korban Pesach, but the emphasis in our formulation seems to be we're trying to mimic him. Right, we're not trying to do it incomplete. We're doing it as complete as possible to feel like we're in the Mikdash. Or, as we'll see, taking the lulav and esrog outside the Beit HaMikdash every day of Sukkos, right? There, you're not doing something incomplete, dafka the opposite. You're doing what they did in the Mikdash outside the Mikdash by taking the lulav and esrog daily. So it could be that the machloket, according to Tosfot, is this a commemoration of the Mikdash, but rather, what type of commemoration is this? Meaning, what is the best way of commemorating the Mikdash? So, I mentioned this yesterday from Tosfot, but if you look at source 3 that I gave you, right, you'll see that the majority position is that, indeed, I can share the screen. Right, the majority position, as the Ron notes, is that indeed this is an argument about the type of derabanan it is, not whether it's derabanan, and that's what he says. Rov mefarshim maskimim. This is 3 here. Dishvir omer achshav the leka havavalo karban ena elami derabanan ba'alma zeich elamikdash kid amar amemar hatam. Most people agree, not the Rambam, but most mefarshim agree that according to everybody, Shvira Omer is only Dirabanan. Okay? We'll come back to the Svar Emet later. But to make the point, what we need to do is analyze the different types of things we might mean by the words Zecher LeMikdash. So as we said, one type of Zecher LeMikdash is mourning. Right? One way we remember the Mikdash is mourning. And the classic sugya for this I gave you is Bava Batra Samach Amud Bet. So, again, you have the English and the Hebrew here, if you want, in number 4. You can see my screen, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, ein misaydin, ve'ein mechayrin, ve'ein mefaychin bizman hazeh. Right? You don't plaster your house fully, you don't tile fully, you don't paint, etc. as a sign of mourning for the Beit HaMikdash. Tana Rabbanan. Kishacharav habayit bashniya rabu prushin b'Yisrael shalol echol basar shalol eshtot yayin. When the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, there were those people who said, we should never eat meat again. We should never drink wine. Nitbal en Rabbi Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua went to them, and Amar lahem, b'ni, b'nai, my sons. V'b'nei ma'in i'atem ochlem basar v'inatem shotin yayin. Why aren't you eating meat? Why aren't you drinking wine? Amru lo, they said to him, Nochal basar shemimenu makrivin agave mizbeach, v'achshav batel. Should we eat meat? We used to bring meat on the mizbeach. We don't have a mizbeach. Nishtei yayin sheminaschen agave mizbeach. Should we drink wine? We used to do wine libations at the Beit HaMikdash, and now we don't have it. We need to mourn it. So Amr lehem imkein lechem lo nochal shekvar batlu min achot. He said, okay, there were grain offerings in the Mikdash also. The Karban HaOmer, the Shteha Lechem, the Lechem Apanim. So you want to stop eating bread too? They said, hey, great idea. We won't eat bread either. Efshar b'peirot, we'll eat fruit. He said, fruit? Peirot lo nochal. Shekvar batlu bikurim? What do you mean? There were fruit offerings. There was the bikurim. They said, okay, fine. Efshar b'peirot acherim, we'll have fruit that weren't brought bikurim, not the Shevat Aminim. We'll live on oranges and bananas. Okay, good. He said, really? Mayim lo nishteh. How about water? You don't want to have water? Water. We also had water. We had the water libation on Sukkot. Shekvar batal nisa chamayim. Shatkan. Shatku. They were quiet. They had nothing to say. So Amar Lahan, he said to them, listen, Banai, my children. Bova Omar Lachem Shlod Itabel Kolikar Yeshar. I can't tell you not to mourn at all. Shekvar Nigzar Gzeira. Because yeah, the decree happened, the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. We gotta do something. Uli Itabel Yoter Midai Yeshar. But I also can't tell you to mourn too much. Because Yeshar, She'en goes and Gzeira Tsiwam Kin Robot Siri Cholin Lamudba. Because we can't have a decree that the majority of Kali Yisrael can't handle. Dichtiv, b'meira atem norim, votim atem kovim agoy kulo. Ela, kach amru chachamim. Sad adam et beito basir mishayer bo davar mu'at. Rather, what should you do? Plaster your house. Just leave a little bit off. That's the way to do it. Meaning, you can't have complete mourning. You need to do something. So what do we learn from this Gemara? So let's see what you learn from this Gemara. So point one that we learn from this Gemara is that one way we commemorate the Beit HaMikdash is by mourning. But there's two ways of reading Rabbi Yeshua. Okay? What?
It's specifically not doing what they did.
Good. So what is he, how does he agree, disagree? Meaning they think the way to mourn is basically anything that has to do with the Mikdash, cut it out of our lives. So that we feel the loss, we feel the pain. Right? That's the way they conceptualize mourning. But Rabbi Yeshua argues, right? What does he say? No. There are two ways of reading it. What are they?
You shouldn't do the exact thing, right? So you shouldn't do what they did, but not completely.
Good. So there's two ways. One is a depressing way, which is to say as follows. Rabbi Yeshua agrees that mourning should really mean cut out all happiness from your life, cut out anything mikdash related from your life so you feel the loss. Elamai, you can't do it because you'll die. You won't have water, you won't have food, you won't have anything. You won't have a house. So what can we do? We limit it to lesser things. But fundamentally, he agrees that the right way to mourn is to cut things out of your life as much as possible. It's just that he disagrees that it's going to be possible to cut everything out of the Mikdash from your life totally. That's one possibility. That's a depressing way of reading Rabbi Yeshua. There's another way of reading him, though, which is that he disagrees fundamentally. He thinks that they thought that what was the way to mourn the Mikdash is to cut everything out of your life. And when he says, no, paint your house but leave a little bit, he's not saying, I really agree with you that you shouldn't paint your house at all, but we can't survive, so what can you do? What's he saying? The better way to commemorate the Mikdash is to transform it into mere symbolism. Meaning, I disagree fundamentally. Don't cut everything mikdash out of your life. Do symbolic acts. Cut symbolic things out of your life that will remind you that the mikdash is there. Right? It's not that he thinks that it's just impossible to mourn fully. He thinks that that's not the right way of going about it. We prefer symbolic mourning to complete misery on principle. Now, you understand those two ways of formulating it?
Yeah.
Again, right, just to make it clear, meaning, is it that Rabbi Yeshua fundamentally thinks that when we're mourning the Mikdash, ideally you should cut as much out of your life as possible, it's just that we know you can't do it because you'd die, you wouldn't have a house, you wouldn't have food, but really he thinks the best way to mourn is to cut everything out of your life? Or is he saying, no, I just disagree. You think that the right way to mourn is to cut entire categories of experience out of your life? Like, don't eat fruit, don't eat... It's not true. The best way that we want you to mourn the Mikdash is to pick particular acts that remind you about the Mikdash, that make you feel a little bit sad, But fundamentally, we want you to live life. We want you to continue and keep little symbolic things on your plate. So let me give you an example here of what it would look like if you thought that Yeshua agreed with number one. Okay? What would it look like if you thought that Rabbi Yeshua fundamentally agreed with the Chacham, with these Chachamim that Yeshua was agreeing with, and just thought that practically it was impossible, okay? So, if you continue here at number five, let's focus on this line. So, the Gemara says that one of the things they shouldn't do is, let's read it from here. Tanya, Amar Yishuv ben Elisha, Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash, Din Hu Shenigzar Al Atzmeinu Shelo Lachol Basar Velo Lishtot Yayin. Really, we shouldn't eat meat, we shouldn't have wine. But we can't make a decree that no one can handle. And since the time when they set up gzerot against us that we can't keep the Torah, they don't let us keep the Torah. They don't let us do bris milah, or bris milah, something like that. We should stop getting married and stop having children. And therefore, we should never, this way, the Jewish people would die out, and they won't be suffering from not being able to keep the Torah. Why didn't we do it? But leave the Jews alone. It's better they do things by accident than on purpose.
Very extreme.
So, the Gemara number 6 tells you that the halacha on the books is that nasa isha v'shaha ima eser shanim v'lo yalda ino rashai levatel gersha muter li nasa l'acher rashai asheni l'shod ima eser shanim. If you marry a woman and she doesn't have kids for 10 years, you're supposed to get divorced. But that's the halacha in the Mishnah. So what? Nowadays, we don't do this. Why don't we do this? So one possibility, which is found in the Rivash, is that we don't coerce about it. But maybe it really is the halacha on the books. But if you look here, in the Mordechai, number 7, he says something shocking. And he says, Chein peirsh Ravi Avon Zikeni, V'chein matzadi v'shem Rabbi Ribar Shmuel, V'garsinan b'chezkat habatim, Dinu shenigzor al atzmeni l'adabel Yerushalayim shel Yisa Isha v'shelo l'idbanim. Really, nowadays, you shouldn't be getting married. Ela she'en gozun gzeira l'atzibor l'mken rov atzibor yecholim lamod bo. But we didn't force it, because people can't handle it. L'chol ha'pachot, ilkach, l'chol ha'pachot, en kofen lotzi, v'afilu b'eretz Yisrael, chayev latin ktuba, v'gam tanai ktuba. And therefore, nowadays, we don't force you to get divorced. Why? Because really, you should never have gotten married, and you shouldn't be having children. It's just, what choice do we have? People can't live like that. But if your wife doesn't have children, we're not going to force you to get divorced, because you really shouldn't be having children anyways. So the Mordechai has this incredibly wild read, which is that, right, how does he understand this? He understands it clearly like formulation one, right, which is ideally mourning should be complete, cut out anything that's in the Mikdash, cut out normal life, don't get married, don't have children, don't eat food, it's just you can't handle it. But if in a particular instance you could manifest it. Meaning, someone got married and his wife didn't have children. Okay, so now we just don't tell you to get divorced and mamela, you won't have children. So then, that's fine. Right? We encourage that. But if you take the other formulation, which is that no, lechatchila, we don't want you to have complete mourning. We want you to do something symbolic. So then we would say this isn't true. Okay?
Isn't that what the Mishnah is saying?
Which Mishnah?
Isn't the Mishnah proof that you need to have children so that it's more symbolic than...
Correct. That's the simple read of the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah doesn't say this is not true post-Mikdash. Right? The Mordechai is a chiddush to say that that's only pre-Mikdash. But post-Korban HaBayit, Dafka, this halacha doesn't apply, right? That's a very radical read. Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's bring... But let's take these ideas and let's bring it back... Say it again?
If his chiddush is true that this is only that post mikdash, it doesn't work. Then why would it be taught in the first place?
Maybe because it's the theoretical law. Maybe because the Mishnah records traditions from before Korban HaBayit. Right, the Mishnah sometimes records positions from before Korban HaBayit.
That we specifically don't follow today.
Well, that's what he'd have to say. It'd be a bit hard. You're right. It'd be a bit difficult. With this in mind, let's come back to our sugya. So again, we said that it could be that the machlokes amemar and abaye is whether counting Sfirat Omer nowadays is d'oraisa or only a zecher l'mikdash. But the other way is to say, what type of derabanan, or what type of zecher l'mikdash is it? Right? What, it could be that it's the type of zecher l'mikdash where it's a mere symbolism, but what do you want to do? It's the way we mourn in our personal lives, right? Like we eat meat, or we drink wine, we whatever, we paint our house, but we leave a square left over. So... We live our life mostly normal, but we diminish it a little bit to drive home the point that the mikdash isn't here. So it could be that that's what Amemar is saying, Sfirat HaOmer is. Right? Namely, that we continue to count Sfirat HaOmer, but we leave a little bit out. That even in our mitzvah life, we diminish our mitzvah life to make us feel that pain. Right, that little pang, right? Fundamentally, we mostly continue living our life, but we leave a little bit out of our mitzvah life to remind us that the mikdash isn't here. But then what does Abaye think? So as we said, Abaye may be talking about a different type of zecher l'mikdash, which is not one in which we diminish our life, but where we commemorate the mikdash by... By doing what?
Symbolism.
So not mere symbolism, by showing that you do it by reliving the mikdash, by saying the mikdash isn't forgotten because we can take the mikdash and continue to live as if the mikdash was around, meaning we can keep those rituals alive even without the mikdash. Right, that's how we're going to commemorate the mikdash. Or in other words, the machloket is this a mere zecher l'mikdash? Right, that keyword, mere commemoration, or is it, right, it's like, you know those, you ever go to those, reenactments of the Civil War?
Yeah, all the time, right?
You know how people do that? Sometimes on July 4th, they'll bring cannons and, you know, dress up in, you know, clothes from the 1800s and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, you've never gone to them. Whatever, it's not the point.
But I've seen them on TV.
Yeah, okay, fine, you've seen them on TV. Those, right? That's not a commemoration, that's a saying, let's relive it, let's reenact it, so to speak. So it could be that the machloket is, how do you want to commemorate the Mikdash? Do you want to do it by making our religious lives incomplete, or by finding ways of keeping the Mikdash alive and complete in our non-Mikdash world? And what I want to show you, and this is a point that many people have made, both academics and traditionalists, is that this type of optimistic commemoration, where you... Well, let's put it differently. What do you think the goal is of commemorating the Mikdash? I understand I'm Amar, but commemorate the Mikdash by cutting out some of your ritual life, right? That's meant to make you feel sad. But what would it mean to commemorate the Mikdash by Dafka doing exactly what we used to do in the Mikdash without the Mikdash? What is the goal of that type of reenactment, Zecher LeMikdash, right? What are you trying to accomplish by commemorating the Mikdash in that way?
You're saying that this is how our life should be, and this is what it will be.
Good. So I called it anticipating and reimagining, right? You're doing two things. One is you're being hopeful that the Mikdash will come back soon, right? It's an anticipatory institution, right? One way of saying it is, look, you should keep doing it as you did in the Mikdash because you believe that the Mikdash is going to be rebuilt any day, and therefore we got to keep up practice, right? That's a different way of commemorating the Mikdash, in an optimistic way. The other is to reimagine, meaning it's to prove that life goes on post-Mikdash. So give me an example, right, of number two, right? Give me an example of number two. What is a way in which, in our everyday lives, we reimagine the Mikdash and prove that even though we don't have the Mikdash, in a certain sense, it continues on? Give me a statement from Chazal that supports that.
Davening.
Davening, or more specifically, davening where? Davening where? Where do we daven? Hopefully in shul. Not nowadays, because we're all not davening in shul. Right. But what do Chazal say about davening in shul? They say that the batei midrash and the batei kinesiot are mikdash ma'at. You ever heard someone say that from the Gemara in Megillah Chavtet? They're a small bit of mikdash.
Yeah.
Right, that's a Gemara. And what is that saying? That's saying that the... It's not saying that we missed the Mikdash. It's saying at a certain level, we still have the Mikdash. Right? That we have a mini Mikdash. So there are two reasons where you might, two ways of understanding Zecher LeMikdash that would indicate that you should specifically count Sfirat Omer without the Beit HaMikdash the exact way you would have in the Beit HaMikdash. One is because you think the way of commemorating the Mikdash is anticipating the rebuilding the Mikdash, and therefore you got to practice. And the other is to say that the best way of commemorating the Mikdash is to reimagine what it could be like to have Mikdash-esque experiences in a non-Mikdash world. Both of those would lead to the conclusion that even if Sfirat Omer is Zecher LeMikdash, you should do it the way we did in the Beit HaMikdash. And what people have pointed out is that these two models, the anticipatory and the reimagining Mikdash life post-Mikdash, those seem to be part of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's takanot across the board post-Beit HaMikdash. And I want to show you this, okay? So if you look at 8. Barishona haya halulav nital b'mikdash shiva u'mimedina yom echad. Originally, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the lulav was taken in the Beit HaMikdash all 7 days of Sukkot. Mishach, and outside the Beit HaMikdash, only on the first day. Misheharav Beit HaMikdash, Misheharav hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shehei lulav nital b'medina shiva zecher l'mikdash. But after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, take the lulav outside the Mikdash every day zecher l'mikdash. V'shehei Yom Haneif Kulo Asur. And that, back to our Omer case, we'll see this again in Menachot, that you shouldn't eat the Karban HaOmer, you shouldn't eat the new grain the entire day of the 16th until the 17th. So then the Gemara says, Uminolan Davdinan Zechel Mikdash, how do you know that you make commemorations on the Mikdash? The Amar Kra, Ki Ele Rucha Lecha, Umakotcha Erpaecha, Num Hashem, Ki Nidchu Karu Lecha Tzion, He Doresh Ein La, Michal Dubai Drisha. Because the Pasuk says, I will restore health to you, and I'll heal you of your wounds, said the Lord, because they have called you an outcast. She is Tzion, there is none who cared for her. Which teaches that someone they need someone to care for it, to pay attention. V'shehe Yom HaNeif Kulo Asur. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is second Gzeira, that you should eat, you shouldn't eat the Omer the entire day of the 16th, my taima, Mehera Yibana Ben HaMikdash, Riyamu Yishtake Milochanu Be'er Mizrach, Avshav Nemi Nechol. The reason was as follows. Because he said, Me'ikra din, you're allowed to eat, if there is a Beit HaMikdash, you can't eat the new grain until you bring the Karban HaOmer. Without the Beit HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, you're allowed to technically eat Midoraisa as soon as the 16th, the sun rises on the 16th. But what's the problem? We're worried that if the Beit HaMikdash gets rebuilt and you remember that you used to eat new grain as soon as the sun rose on the 16th, you'll do that even with the Beit HaMikdash before you bring the Karban. So what do? We tell you, don't eat any new grain until the 17th so that you won't mess up when you rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. So now, let me ask you about these two gzeirot. Okay? The second gzeirah, that you shouldn't eat the new grain until the 17th, just in case the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt and you'll forget that you're supposed to wait until the Karban is brought. What type of Zechel HaMikdash is that? It's anticipation, right? It's,
yeah.
It's always keep in mind that the Beit HaMikdash might be rebuilt right away, and therefore you always have to do things that will make sure that you get things right when the Beit HaMikdash comes. What about the other one? Right, what about the lulav? That in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, you only took the lulav on Shabbat. On the first day outside the Mikdash. And in the Mikdash, 7 days. And once the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, you take the lulav every day outside the Beit HaMikdash. What type of Zechel HaMikdash is that?
I wouldn't call it mourning either.
Right, it's not mourning. What is it? It's recreation, right? It's like the shul. It's dafka, not mourning. It's saying, it's the opposite of mourning. It's saying that despite the fact that the Mikdash isn't here, we can reimagine our lives to contain Mikdash-esque elements even without a Beit HaMikdash. Right? So if you think about it, this type of gzeira can very well explain how Svir HaOmer might be Zechel HaMikdash, even though you hold that we do it exactly as we did in the Mikdash. It's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, that one of the ways that you commemorate the Mikdash is not by mourning, not by making your life incomplete, but is bringing the Mikdash into your non-Mikdash life. Right? Even though you're not chayav, you count as if the Mikdash were around. Even though it used to be that only the Beit HaMikdash would take the lulav every day, now that there's no Beit HaMikdash, you need to take that lulav Beit HaMikdash experience into your everyday life. And if you look at 9...
If that's the case, why don't we do something like give korbanot still?
So what I'm trying to show you is that we have different ways that we commemorate the Mikdash, right? Karbanot is complicated because Karbanot needs Kedusha, right? There are certain things we can't do, but that wouldn't be a commemoration. Now, there are people who believe that, right, this was a big machloket, where Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer thought that Bizman Hazeh, you are allowed to bring the Karban Pesach and try to get people to bring the Karban Pesach, even nowadays. But that's not a commemoration.
Aren't they still trying to do that?
There are still people who try to do this, but that's not a commemoration.
Find the mizbeach. They want to do an har abayit.
They want to say that you're allowed to bring the karban on the mizbeach without a beit hamikdash. But that's not a commemoration, right? That's saying that the mitzvah never stopped, right? But we do have elements of this quote of this continuing this imagining that we still have karbanot, and how is that? None of you are Mayagata to share. But the last sugyot in Menachot and Daf Kuf Yod say that by saying the Karbanot, or by learning about the Karbanot, it's as if you brought the Karbanot. And we know that Tfilah is partially Zechel Karbanot. Right? So Dafka, that is this type of Zechel Mikdash, where you try to commemorate the Mikdash by bringing Mikdash into your non-Mikdash life. If you want to look at another one, I give you here a 9. Another sugya on Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did the exact same thing by shofar. The Mishnah tells you that Yom Tov Shal Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yod B'Shabbat B'Mikdash Hayu Tokin Avalo B'Medina. On Shabbat in the Bein HaMikdash you are allowed to blow the shofar, but not outside. Mishacharav Bein HaMikdash Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Shiu Tokin B'kol Makom Sheish Bo Beit Din. When there was no Bein HaMikdash, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said you're allowed to blow the shofar wherever you have a Beit Din. And Omer Rabbi Elazar Lo Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai El Biavne Bilvad. So again, what do you see? That Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is a consistent position. How are you supposed to commemorate the Mikdash? Not by diminishing your religious life, but how? By reliving, like by making it as if the Mikdash exists in our non-Mikdash life. The Gemara even tells a story. I once heard from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. This is his favorite Gemara because it's evidence of how humor can deal with a complex situation. Or if you look at the Gemara says that Pam Achat Chal Rosh Hashanah Liyot B'Shabbat. So it once happened that Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat. Vayu Kol Ha'arin Nitgamsin. And everybody got together, and Amar Lahem, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Levnei Beteira, Nitka. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, according to his Shita, come, let's blow the shofar. Amru lo, Nidon. He said, let's talk about it. Right? It's not so pashut. It's not obvious you're allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbat outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Amar Lahem, Nitka v'achakach Nidon. He said, I got a compromise for you. How about this? We'll blow the shofar this year, and then we'll talk about it for next year. So la'achar shetaku, once they blew the shofar, they agreed to this compromise. Amru lo, nadon. They said, so let's talk about it. Amru lahem, farnishma karen biavna, v'imishin lacham ha'isa. Sorry, it already happened. There's nothing to talk about it. I win. Right, I win. Right, and there is a certain, you know, irony, you know, outsmarting the opponent here, which is slightly comical. But that's what he does. To show you another manifestation of this position of Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you look at number 10 in the Yerushalmi says that Hakol Modim Biyom Derishon Shomer Al Netilat Lulav. Everyone agrees that on day one, the bracha that you say on lulav is on the taking of the lulav. Ma pligin b'shar kol hayamim. But there's a machloket. What bracha do you say on taking the lulav on the other days? Reb Yochanan omer al netilat lulav. Reb Shuvin Levi omer al mitzvat zkenim. So what do they argue about? Reb Yochanan says that every day that you take the lulav, you make the bracha on taking the lulav. And what does Yerushalmi ben Levi say? You make the bracha that we keep the dirabanans, that we keep rabbinic law. So there are a lot of ways of explaining this machlokes, right? Whether you think that the nature of rabbinic law is a generic obligation to keep the rabbinic law, or that it is instantiated in each action. But in light of what we've been saying, it could be that their machloket is, Rabbi Yochanan says, the mitzvah is to recreate the mitzvah of Netilat Lulav every day, and therefore you make that bracha. As opposed to Reshub and Levi, who says, nah, this is something else, it's some generic kiyum. So, again, what you see here is that one way of understanding the idea of Zecher LeMikdash is this optimistic way of, one, anticipating the Mikdash will be rebuilt, and two, is Dafka doing exactly what he used to do in the Mikdash to prove that life goes on post-Mikdash, and that's a form of Zecher LeMikdash, which is keeping the Mikdash alive in your non-Mikdash life. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai seem to make a lifestyle of this, but it could be that that's why we Dafka do Svirat HaOmer, even if it is a Zecher LeMikdash and Dirabanan, the exact way we used to do it in the Mikdash. I'll just point out that agadically, this sort of optimistic version of Zecher LeMikdash finds other expressions in Yochanan ben Zakkai's life. So for example, in number 11, the Gemara tells you that Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you remember, he managed to get to Vespasian and have special requests. He didn't ask for the Beit HaMikdash to be saved because he didn't think that would work. But what did he ask for? Yavne v'chachameha. He said, give me Yavne, which you remember is where the Beit Din was and where he said we could mimic the blowing of the shofar of the Beit HaMikdash. So again, you see that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has this optimistic notion that part of what it means to commemorate the Mikdash is to make sure that life goes on post-Mikdash. Another expression of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's optimism can be found in Avot Rabbi Natan. Right, I won't read this source in 12, but everybody knows the story of Rabbi Kiva, that when everybody else was crying when they saw the foxes on the Mikdash, right on Har HaBayit, Rabbi Kiva's laughing because he said this is proof that the prophecies will come true, that the Beit HaMikdash will one day be rebuilt. You know that, Gemara? You've heard this enough times?
No.
No?
Yeah.
You can say no, and then we can read it.
I have not heard
it. Okay, fine. So let's read it quickly. I'll read it in English. Right, the Gemara relates another incident involving those sages. On another occasion, they were ascending to Jerusalem after the destruction of the temple. When they arrived on Mount Scopus and Arf Sofim and saw the site of the temple, they rent their garments in mourning in keeping with halachic practice. When they arrived at the Temple Mount, they saw a fox that emerged from the site of the Holy of Holies. They began weeping, and Rekiva was laughing. They said to him, "For what reason are you laughing?" Rekiva said, "For what reason are you weeping?" They said to him, "This is the place concerning which it is written, and the non-priest who approaches shall die, and now foxes walk in it, and shall we not weep?" Rekiva said to them, "That's why I'm laughing. As it is written, when God revealed the future to the prophet Isaiah, and I will take to me faithful witnesses to attest, Uriah the priest and Zechariah the son," if I can't even pronounce that in English. Now, what is the connection between Uriah and Zechariah? He clarifies the difficulty. Uriah prophesied during the first temple period, and Zechariah prophesied during the second temple period, as he was among those who returned to Zion from Babylonia. Rather, the verse established that fulfillment of the prophecy of Zechariah is dependent on fulfillment of the prophecy of Uriah. In the prophecy of Uriah, it's written, "Therefore, for your sake, Zion shall be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become rubble, and the Temple Mount as the high places of a forest, where foxes are found." There's a rabbinic tradition that this was prophesied by Uriah. In the prophecy of Zechariah, it is written, "There shall yet be elderly men and elderly women sitting in the streets of Jerusalem." Until the prophecy of Uriah with regard to the destruction the city was fulfilled, I was afraid that the prophecy of Zechariah would not be fulfilled, as the two prophecies are linked. Now that the prophecies of Uriah were fulfilled, it is evident the prophecy of Zechariah remains valid. The Gemara adds that the sages said to him, employing the formulation, Akiva, you have comforted us, right? Akiva nechamtanu, Akiva nechamtanu. So here you see Rabbi Akiva as the voice of optimism, right? As I see the destruction, I know that this isn't the end. But if you look, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also has a similar story, except I want you to pay attention to the difference in the way he does it. And this is in Avot Rabbi Natan. The Gemara says that the world survives on the acts of loving kindness, right? On chesed, gemilut chasadim. So here's another story. The world originally was built only for the sake of loving kindness. As it states, for I have said, the world is built by loving kindness. Your faithfulness shall you establish in the very heavens. One time, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was leaving Jerusalem, and he saw Rabbi Yeshua going after him, and he saw the temple destroyed. Rabbi Yeshua said, woe to us that this is destroyed, the place where the sins of Israel were atoned for. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to him, my son, do not be distraught. We have an atonement that's similar to this. And what is it? It is milut chasadim. It's acts of loving kindness, as it says, for I desire loving kindness, not sacrifice. So what do you see, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? What does he do? Again, he says that don't worry about it. The way to deal with Churban HaBayit is to convince ourselves that there are still religious things we can do that replace the Beit HaMikdash. So Chesed replaces Karbanot. You used to take the Lulav only in the Beit HaMikdash for 7 days, now we do it everywhere. You used to blow the shofar on Shabbat only in the Beit HaMikdash, now we do it wherever there's a Beit Din. And again, what I mentioned before, the Mikdash Ma'at, is this line in Megillah, Vahi lahen mikdash ma'at, Amar of Yitzchak, Elu batei kinesia, Rubatei midrash, Shiva bavel. Right, the shuls, they are the mikdash ma'at, they're the small bit of mikdash, etc. You get another one in Brachot, I don't want to get into. So hold that thought, okay? Now that we've gone through all of these, what I want to do tomorrow is come back and hammer this out in the context of Sfirat HaOmer. Right, because what I've already done is pointed out the possibility that once you understand there are different ways of conceptualizing Zeichel and Mikdash, right? There's mourning, there's Dafka making our life incomplete, making our ritual life incomplete, right? Counting days and not weeks. There's this other optimistic view, which is to say that the best way of commemorating the Mikdash is to make sure that its messages continue to live on because we, A, constantly anticipate the rebuilding of the Mikdash, and B, we dafka do things that convince us the life goes on post the Mikdash, and therefore we try to mimic and reimagine and recreate the Mikdash as our way of commemorating Mikdash. Not by diminishing our religious life, but dafka by living as in a certain way as if the Beit HaMikdash was never destroyed. What I'm arguing is that that might be what the words Zeichel HaMikdash mean when it comes to Sfirat HaOmer, and that's why even though we think it's Derabanan LaHalacha, and we think it's Zeichel HaMikdash, we dafka don't diminish it. We dafka count the exact way that we did in the Mikdash. What I want to do is flesh this out just a little bit more in the Omer in a few ways. Right here, I've given you a little piece from the Rav on Sfirat HaOmer, and specifically, I want to deal with this. What I give you here on the last two pages is I want to deal with the following question, which is why don't we say Shehecheyanu when we start counting Sfirat HaOmer? And what I want to argue is that the machloket about why we don't say Shehecheyanu on Sfirat HaOmer depends on these different formulations of the nature of Zeichel HaMikdash when it comes to Sfirat HaOmer. So tomorrow, if you can try to look at this Sfirat HaOmer, which was source number 2.
Derabanan
Deraisa
thing? What? Shehecheyanu is not dependent on Derabanan
Deraisa. So we'll see. That might be the answer. So what I want to do is see the different sheetot. There's a balamor that I gave you. So what I want you to do is try to read source 2, which is the Sfat Emet, and then from 16 and on, which is really just the summary of the Rav, the balamor, and a summary from the Daf al Hadaf of different explanations from the Griz and from Yechiel Michal Feinstein why we don't say Shehecheyanu Sfirat HaOmer that will touch on some of these different formulations of the nature of Zecher LeMikdash by Sfirat HaOmer. Okay? So we'll do that tomorrow, okay?